Good evening, everyone. It has been quite a while since you've heard from me, and you know I normally record in the mornings, but I have a really special guest today, Miriam Krogman, who is so talented in so many ways and brilliant in so many ways. And I've tried to get this woman on the podcast for months and months now, and our schedules just weren't meshing. And we both said to each other, it will happen when it's meant to be. So tonight is the night. Woohoo! Welcome to the show. So happy to have you here.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to spend some time with you and to dig in to our lives. Love
and
it.
Dig in we will, my friend. First of all, a little background. I hosted a wellness retreat here at my home in Riverside, and Miriam came over with all of her talent, skill, passion, eagerness, enthusiasm, and art supplies. And we did a little paint and sip.
Yes.
Even though it was 9 o'clock in the morning, we were sipping mimosas. And actually, my posse can paint. They did a good job. You made it easy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I found out a lot about you at that event. And you are not only an incredible artist and leader, you're
Thank
also
you.
A professor. And there's so much more to you that I would like to share with my network. And so welcome to the show. I'm going to start by asking you, what is your story?
When people ask me that question, there's so much that goes through my mind. I'm definitely an expat. I think people can, you know, hear it on the podcast, probably wondering where I'm coming from. But I was born in France on the border with Switzerland.
Nice.
My father was doing his ministry degree over there. He became a pastor, so you know I was born when he was in school.
Very nice.
So we spent some time in the mountain, of course, and then we went down to Paris, where he was given his first church to lead. So I've been in a family of leaders and community organizers for a very long time, and then. So we spent maybe 8 years in Paris, and then we were sent to Africa. So I actually grew up in Gabon and Cameroon as well. So I have some recording. I have some
I
recording
love
of
that.
myself and my little sister with very thick, you know, tribal accents. Just really, really fun. I would love to go back there one day to sort of see if people are still there. So it's been a long time, but. Yeah, so we spent about several years in Africa, then we moved to the Caribbean. So I also lived in the Caribbean. My father is from Martinique,
Oh,
French
nice.
island, and my mother is French. So I had all my family there as well. So I spent a lot of time with grandma. So I was raised also by grandma for long periods of our lives. And then I came back to the Europe, so we spent some time obviously in Europe, and then that's it. So life continued. I lived in Paris, I lived in the South, I moved a lot.
Let me ask you about that though. That makes me so personally, I think that was a blessing and a gift to be able to live in so many different places. Your global worldview and your perspective is so much grander than most of us who are born somewhere and stay that somewhere, right? So how do you think that's impacted your ability to be inclusive of the other, whatever the other might be?
I'll tell you this much: if some of your listeners are worried about, you know, moving a lot and their kids being in difficult positions, it's been really hard because we were changing schools and places all the time, you know, losing friends, losing roots. But what that also allowed us to be is extremely flexible and speak several languages. Right, I can speak, you know, obviously French, Creole, English, Spanish. I have notions of a lot of European languages. There's a lot of intonations from, you know, different African countries that I can respond to, things like that. So it actually allowed us to be flexible in our heads with languages, with people, with cultures. We're multicultural ourselves, so that also obviously helps. But it allowed me to easily adapt to who comes to me, you know, whomever is in my class or whomever I meet, just really be able to get in there and have conversations with anybody.
That is
You
so
know,
amazing.
break the ice with
Right.
something that sounds like them or that they recognize. So that multiculturality allows me to really speak to a lot of different people and to sort of make them comfortable with me
Yes.
right away. So I think
That's
that's
so exciting. So look, I left home at 18, the first chance I could to get out and explore the world and explore it, I did. However, most of the people I know were born and lived and die or will die where they were born. And I just think your experience, even though for your parents it might have been a struggle and a strain, and for you and your sister, maybe briefly a struggle and a strain, overall, it sounds very exciting and like a really great way to ensure curiosity about others. Well,
yeah.
that excites me. What excites you? What's going on? Why are you, what excites you right now about your life?
As you know, in terms of personality, I think what excites me is community. I get a kick out of being with people. So I think that's probably why I also decided when I built my business to get into a community sort of business. You know, spending time with the ladies, for example, when we do paint and sip is my favorite of all time. Really listening to stories, you know, laughing, having fun,
Why
and
don't you tell
also
us a bit about that? Like I didn't ask much about that because you're so multifaceted. You're a professor, you're an artist, you speak several languages. You're really fascinating. So tell us about the art and sip. What is it that you do?
So I have built a company that allows me to spend a lot of time pulling creativity out of people. A lot of people come to me and say, "Hey, you know, I don't know if I can do this. I can just do stick figures." And they're always very, very surprised by what comes through their hands. And I think that we kill creativity when we leave, you know, middle school.
Totally.
When you bring in activities to, you know, college students or high school students, a lot of time you ask a question and you get blank stares. So bringing art back into the hands of everyone, not only those who think themselves as capable to going through art school, allows me to pull a lot out of them. So remember, I'm a psychologist as well, and I use this kind of
You need to tell me
psychology.
more about that, but I can see that.
Yeah.
Having experienced you and your work twice, I can see that in how you operate.
Yes, we call that the
I feel
campfire
like a little, I'm a little subject of yours.
effect. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not, you know, exploiting you, but we call it the campfire effect. Having people busy with doing things with their hands allows their mind and their body to relax. And that's what I love, really providing that space where people can sit down and let go for a minute. And that allows them to speak about things. So around these, you know, events, I have heard a lot. People just really relax and start talking. A woman once said, you know, that kind of brought scars she didn't know she still had. And I think that's very important to just give people that space to just be together, first of all, that community with like-minded people, relax, drink something, snack on something, but at the same time also so introspect and spend some time with themselves and with people who respond to their experience.
Can I tell you what I observed as
Sure.
I feel like you were, what is it, ethnography? Like you inserted yourself into our event in such a beautiful and seamless way. You became part of the
Yes.
journey, right? So
Yeah.
I would say that it's very difficult in the work that I do to get women to open up in a vulnerable way and tap into their authentic selves and not be afraid. Your work and that day at my home when we had all those women there, I felt like you were seamlessly able to get them to do that. Not consciously able, like you weren't like you must do this, think this, feel this. You just it just happened organically,
Yes,
right?
because it's part of me. I found this niche of my life where, you know, I absolutely love teaching. I absolutely love the arts and I absolutely love the mind, the human mind as a psychologist. So I was able very late in my life, in my 40s, to find this place, this spot where all of my aspects come together and allow me to be authentic with that. And so when I sit down with people, as you said, I'm kind of all in all and morphing into the space I find myself into. And that's what I love. My motto for my company, L'Expression Creative Studios, is create as you are.
Oh my God,
Yes,
yes.
I love people to just be themselves, and I make sure that I'm not a stranger to that space so that they can really feel comfortable within their event, within, the paint party that they have planned with me. So that's what I get a kick out of.
I don't know if this was conscious of, or not, but I felt like the experience we had with you as the kickoff for the wellness retreat led people to be really fully known, right? Like one woman was afraid to engage because she still was locked into her ego, right? She was worried about the quality of her work, where that wasn't the issue at all. It was about, like you said, tapping into your visual and your audible and your kinesthetic self.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. It brings
Yeah.
all the senses. And
Yeah.
also it's kind of vulnerable because you're giving
Totally.
what's inside you, and sometimes we're not sure it has quality and all that stuff. But remember what I always said, it's fine. Paint like you are. Just be yourself. It's beautiful. And people think that I blow smoke to them because I'm saying it's beautiful. I always try to find the beautiful thing in what you do so that you feel appreciated and you feel that there's a space for you. I built this business also because I've seen that in the paint and sip industry, we were just painting this thing, or it was not extremely cultural or very open to all sorts of people. I've gotten requests of stuff that were a little on the fringe, right? But people have all sorts of culture and background, and sometimes they just want to do that. And so I
Yeah.
want them to feel comfortable that I'm accepting what it is that they have inside and what it is that they want to put on the canvas. So it's also that work of acceptance with this
It's
company.
totally the paradox of vulnerability, whereas people, when they think of themselves as being vulnerable, feel like it may be perceived as a weakness, yet the audience or the receiver or others perceive that vulnerability as a strength. It's courage, right?
Exactly. Yes,
Yeah,
yes.
it was beautiful. It was beautiful. And look, I heard you. I saw you. I observed you. I felt like you became part of the fabric of the day. Like I kind of feel like my next one I can't do without you. I'm
Power
like, yeah,
man.
I had planned to do another one. And I can't imagine doing it without you starting the day.
I love it. Thank you so much.
You
But yeah,
bet.
just especially with women, that sisterhood, that is important to me. Obviously, it's my biggest clientele as well, because women are more prone to want to be together and do their sort of thing and
Right. We
stick together.
need one another.
And because we do need it. We need that me time, we need to that relaxed time, and we need to speak to each other to hear each other's struggle and to kind of feel better. One of my real goal, and as I work with children as well, or people with disabilities, I want them to come out of that class feeling like they had a good time, they learned something, they created something beautiful, and they feel good because they feel heard, they feel that they had fun. If you really ask people how they felt after spending time with us in the studio, that's what we make sure they feel like, that they had a good time, that they were accepted, not judged for, what they have done, and just to feel good stuff. That's
It's the ultimate example of inclusion. You are free to be, and you are acknowledged and valued as you are.
Absolutely.
I feel like that. So, all right, we've talked a little bit about your passion, what you do. You're very blessed and fortunate to have found your ikigai before the day you die, like most people don't, right? Tell us more about education. How are you involved in the community? Where do you live? What else do you do for work? What pays the bills?
Wow. Okay. So, I'm working really hard for my company to pay the bills. But I went into psychology because of the fear of art. People think that art is not a job, that it's not going to sustain you. So that was the fear of my parents. They were worried that I was not going to do it. Remember, I was in Paris, right? That's the capital of art, and there's so many artists, and it's hard to break through and all that. So I was also really good with just engaging with folks, and so I decided to get into psychology because that was also what my parent did a lot, without doing it directly, but as a pastoral family, that's what they would do, counseling, supporting, and all that. So it was kind of natural. So I went into that. I did my undergrad in France, and then I met my husband, an American, Caribbean man, who was doing his doctoral degree in physics. And
Wow, smarty pants.
yes, absolutely. So I met him. He was actually finishing his postdoctoral work, and then he found a job here in California. So I followed. I'm sorry.
Do you need some water?
Yeah, hold on a second.
No worries, no worries. People know that this podcast is a real conversation. Right, it's not edited, it's not polished, it's not,
Edits.
the real deal. I've actually dropped the
Yeah.
F-bomb on it before unintentionally, but here's who I
Bye.
am, right?
We're real. We're real. Yeah.
Totally. So how fortunate for me personally, and the 20 other women who were here that that happened, and that you and your husband are in the area. I'm telling you, I was on fire with ideas on how we could co-create some better realities for a lot of women I know. I got people who wrote me about what a wonderful day it was and how they
Sounds
opened
good.
up to their, how do you say this? Maybe the child inside, their real authentic selves, because we started with the challenge of being authentic on. Through the painting, with the conversation, with the introductions, so it was really unbelievable. I mean, I've done events before. My events are always about psychology and sociology and how to tap into the woman we don't see at work or the woman we don't see in public. And your work really catapulted that. Like these people felt safe. And, it was evident in their paintings. They were proud to show them. And it wasn't just a task, it was really like writing in a journal.
Oh, it should not. Yeah, it should not be a test. It should be an expression of yourself again.
Totally.
But I'm
Well,
gonna
then
say this, Susan, you made it easy too, because you're wonderful. The way
you
you
don't have to say that, but
cradle around these women, and you also allowed them to make that statement. I forgot what it was called, but you had that strong statement about themselves. So
yeah.
we did, you and I kind of work on making sure that all the barriers were broken so that creativity could, explode
Love.
and come out of them and allow them to be themselves in that space.
Honest to goodness, I don't think the day would have been the success that it was had it not begun with you and your work.
No, thank you.
I
That's
know I
my
do good work. I know that women all across the globe, including in the UK, are like,
goal.
you made me a different woman. No, I didn't. I just created a safe space for you to make yourself a different woman. And then when
Yes.
you came along, it was like, wowza. And look, folks, we're talking about paint and sip. You might have heard of paint and sip. It's not just your typical average go to the studio and do a paint and sip and leave. This was a very personal bonding experience. People cried. People laughed. People were afraid to say things in public that they said there. Like they opened up and said, I've never shared this with anyone. And having you there, Miriam, is what really broke the dam or opened the floodgates.
Well, thank you. What happens at L'Expression stays at L'Expression. We're free to be ourselves. But yeah, so again,
That's
I think
true.
my education allowed me to do that, to be ready for that kind of work as well. And that's what I wanted to do. You said it really right. I did not want this to be another paint and sip. I didn't build this to
Right.
be a paint. I built this to be a community work
It was
space.
therapy.
Absolutely. Yes,
Let me
not a
ask you, do you have a location where if I want to do another retreat, maybe I would do it there instead of here? Or, I know you're willing to come here. We can facilitate. But I think we have a good thing, at least for the women in my network. I think bringing you in as a staple, a given every time would be good for us.
I appreciate it. So I had a studio that I just moved out of because we're moving, we're expanding, we're changing, we're morphing as I meet more and more opportunities, such as working with charter schools and all the, in the community of Riverside and San Bernardino and Corona and Moreno Valley. So I'm trying to expand. So we just moved out of this very cute little studio that I had downtown on Arlington, but I am now on Main Street in Riverside in the California Tower. I'm
Oh,
here
wow.
for a little while, but I'm looking for actually a much, much bigger space where I can do a lot more than just a paint and sip. I have a lot of things in mind that I want to create. So we are there. I also have a location in Moreno Valley. I just got accepted in Beaumont for the Parks and Recs. We're doing classes in one of their spaces up there in Beaumont. So, I'm looking for opportunities to spread this model across different space to reach as many people as I can. And again, it's both adults with disabilities, kids with disabilities, and children. I also really I'm looking for young talents to kind of foster their creativity as well and get them places wherever I can.
So I want to I'm taking a little exit ramp here. I
Yes.
want you to meet this woman named Pamela Galera. She's the head of Parks and Rec for the city of Riverside. She is an a scholar. She has your enthusiasm, my enthusiasm. She gets us, right? She's
Yes.
all about supporting people, not just women. I'm more along supporting women, but she is all about having people be open and real and authentic. And she has amazing space available at lots of places. And you can tell her boss's wife said so. Like, for example, Fairmont Park. They have a nice, wonderful space there where Fairmont Park could be a great location for you to host these. And I think she would love it. She is, I don't know if you met her. I know you've been to my holiday
I
party.
think, when you showed me the picture, her face is familiar.
She was there. She was there.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I remember her.
But I think the two of you, and maybe I could host a meeting, but the two of you would definitely hit it off. And I think that what you could bring to the city in the way of what you offer would be phenomenal. Again, folks, I'm not pitching a paint and sip. This is a totally unique experience. It's y'all know me. I mean, I am inside out, and I will share more than you think I should, but I'm okay with that, right? She helps you tap into who you truly are and to nurture who you truly are and quit faking it, right? So I think that this would be phenomenal to maybe I'll host something at Fairmont Park and you'll open with that, right? Open with your gift. What would you say is your most, well, let's say proudest professional accomplishment? We can't forget that you're a scholar too. I mean, that's no small potatoes. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yes. So my dissertation was focused on dyslexia specifically. I'm a developmentalist, so I was trying to understand child and youth development, but also aging. So like the range of human development. And so I did, published. I have a published chapter in a book about exceptional children. I did, obviously, you have to publish articles. So I did publish a few articles on education, on learning disabilities, on dyslexia, on body image in adolescence. That includes, by the way, some art. So that kind of stuff. So I did publish. I'm pushing my students to do research. We are working together, and I'm always on the go with that. And I'm also writing children books. I'm a muralist. I'm starting to do art for the city of Riverside, for Moreno Valley as well. So I have a lot of different hats, where I try to use this education and whatever it is that you learn when you're doing a PhD, for the service of the community. I've always tried to involve especially youth to sort of push them and train them and see if they can be ready for higher grounds, higher education. They're so talented. And I'm going to tell you this, I'm focusing a lot on minority youth and minority young adults to make sure that they get a space and that they get accepted in labs, that they go to graduate school so that we can really develop a lot more of these minority powers and allow them to enter some spaces where it's difficult for them to be, especially in academia, for example.
I will say that children learn what they live, and they haven't seen enough of themselves in those positions to believe they can be there, right? I get
Yes.
what you're saying. I want to introduce you to a woman named Chelsea Bonini. She's a lawyer. She's also an elected official in the San Mateo County Board of Education. She focuses on dyslexia and children and disabled people and mostly children and education. And I think the two of you could do remarkable things together. So I want to introduce the two of you. She has done great things in the realm of ableism, and she's lived it, right? She's not just an advocate or an ally. She actually has a child who has who is disabled. He has a brain disorder. So, for example, if my child acted out, I'd put him in timeout. Hers, she'd have to call 911. It's very different. That got her thinking about how we need to change the public education system. And then she got involved in politics, and they listened to her, and she was voted into office, and she's made great change. So I think that together, the two of you could really help an underrepresented community that you both care about greatly.
Yeah,
So
and
any other
I see
breakthrough?
on her picture she's showing a lot of books about dyslexia and things like that. So it sounds like we have
Yeah.
I appreciate that you're doing these plugs and connections. That's what it's all about, so that we can actually do great work together in collaboration, so we see problems from different angles. I think that's amazing.
Totally. And look, I think that she could get you involved in San Mateo County, like I'm trying to get involved in Riverside County. So the Bay Area is in need of what you do, and you're not just a brainiac, right? You got a little bit of that, I don't want to say maniac. You have a little bit of that, je ne sais quoi, passion.
The French, okay.
Passion
I'm gonna
for what you
call
do.
myself a creative of all trades. Like Jack of all
Creative.
trades, but creative of all trades. I need to be in different spaces of creativity to feel great. And that's
Well,
all. That's why I'm in.
you clearly are a creative. You actually, I mean, I think of myself as pretty inside out, but you still in me tapped into some things that I hadn't explored before and made me more curious about the young me and, what messages would I share with the young me, that kind of thing. Well, let's talk about this. It hasn't been always easy, I'm sure. Your cute little accent and I can see her, folks. So we're on video. You will not see her, as you know. It's only audio on the podcast. But she's delightful. She's expressive, her hands, and she moves her head when she talks. But I'm sure it hasn't always been a bed of roses. So what has been your biggest challenge or setback, and how did you overcome it?
Many there's been many challenges for sure. Since we're talking to women, let me talk about this one. I cannot have children,
Oh
and
my, okay. Yeah.
for a woman who is a developmentalist and involved in childhood and passionate about childhood and enjoy working and creating with children and is around children all the time, finding out that I could not was just, there's no word for it. So I think that has been looming at the back of my head all these years. I've been married for 18 years, And we've been trying all of that time. Before the pandemic hit, actually, I was getting ready to get into the adoption process. I was like, okay, we've tried, it's not working. We're gonna have to figure that out another way, and let's just take care of some kids that are already here. Having to let go of the idea that we can try, we can, that was a work by itself. And then, I break down sometimes. Somebody takes a baby, their baby, and puts them in my arms. I bawl. That's when I realized that it's touching me a lot more than I wanted. So I got really, busy with my stuff, with my work. And I'm also a little ADD, so I'm like very active. I get into all these activities and so forth. But deep down, not being able to make one of my own, that looks like me, that looks like my husband, this bond that we can have together with that child that is really ours, that has tortured me in many, many, many ways. So
So
my
you're
sister
making strong.
gave me that. Don't cry.
Yeah,
You
no, you
know?
are, because
Yeah.
first of all, you don't know my story, but the reason I breathe is because of the child that I gave birth to. But the second reason I breathe is because of the man who adopted him. So, I think a lot of women who listen to my show, especially, they're mostly professionals, right? So they're busy with work and they have, they're trying to balance all the things, the career and the home and all the things. This is a topic we don't talk about enough because it is so painful. Like, I was not supposed to have children and I did. And I think of him, he was, I think of him as anybody who follows me on Facebook knows that I am way too in love with my son. Like, I am like, he's still in.
Yes,
He's 22 and I treat him like he's an infant, but I
Yes.
am touched and moved by your telling me this, and I love that you've devoted much of your life to service of children, and I just think it's so beautiful. And don't think it's for naught, because folks, people who, like Miriam, who do this, create greater humans, better citizens, people who want to give to others. And frankly, if you're walking this earth and you don't recognize that your purpose in great part is to live in service to others, you're dead already.
I mean, what else is there? We destroy the world, or we give ourselves to build it. So, fight the
I
forces.
love that you were that vulnerable. I mean, I have to get a tissue. So, y'all know I drink wine. I'm sitting here with a glass of wine on my napkin. And I have to use my napkin to wipe the tears from my eyes because you're a beautiful human. And I wouldn't, I mean, gosh, what I wouldn't give to see a bunch of yous running around, right?
Tell
So
you.
if adoption is an option for you, I would highly encourage it because my son grew up to be a remarkable man and not because of me. It was because of my husband. Man, my nose is dripping on my face now and all the ugly things.
I just, so I got busy, like the pandemic hit, so I gave up on that idea for these few years. Things were just too complicated. So I really devoted myself in building the company and all that stuff, and I felt really busy. And I was like, okay, when things kind of tapered down, I was like, okay, I still have to get this business on the road. I was hiring staff and all that stuff. I was trying to take care of all these things.
Oh, wait a minute, lady.
Yeah.
If I ever, and I will, but if I ever have you and your gift in my wellness retreat again, it's going to be you. You can hire all the staff you want, but I want you. Like, I'm not interested in any staff.
That's a problem, right? Because when you're the business and people want
You are
you.
the business. And I will move my event to accommodate your calendar. That's how serious I am. You were definitely, you attracted people. You didn't push upon, you didn't put upon, you attracted. It was very much, I don't know, you made vulnerability look good and feel good.
Well, listen, perhaps, I try to find purpose in this pain. And
Yes.
And you know, this void that I have, not being able to pour my entire love and bone into my child, allows me to have a lot of it and needing to just give it out and spend time with people, listen, love them, love them, you know, just listen to their stories, tell them that they will be okay, you know, all the stuff that I would have told my child.
Oh my
So
God.
a pain and a gain, like it's the world is crazy, but that's what we have. I have to
I think you're a
keep
safe escape from the
yeah.
crazy world.
Yeah. Either I get depressed
How did your,
or
oh, well, I try, but I'm a little, well, this talk is not about me, but people who listen regularly know that I'm not afraid of anything. And that makes me weird or different or whatever. I'm very much an empath. I feel deeply. I can feel sadness. I can feel the good and the bad. So let's speaking of children, right? You were a child once. How did your upbringing influence you and the person you are, the woman you are today?
Oh, there's so much. I'm a biracial child, right? So I've always looked like a unicorn.
Oh, no, you're absolutely beautiful, but let's unpack that.
I'm telling you this because kids always behaved with me like, who are you? You know, I've always been sitting between these two colors, these two cultures, and so that was a tough one. But again, it allowed me to feel all these things and wanting to be loved and wanting to love people. So it shaped what I am today, I think, that struggle. The traveling, as I told you, really kind of pushed us to be super open, creative, open to cultures and learning to switch things in our head to match the people we are with so that we have great experiences. My parents were didn't finish high school, so you know, life was different than in an home with lots of education and all, but they also had a lot of books, and they also had a lot of music and all that. So I was shaped by that, the rhythm, this sort
Can we
of.
talk a little bit about the fact that your parents didn't finish high school and here you are with a PhD? How'd that
Yes.
happen?
That happened because of my husband. So my parents obviously said, you know, go to school, it's important. But they were also self-made people that just, you know, did it without that and did wonderful work in the community, without all of that fluff. So it allows me also to see these both sides, right? But
Right.
my husband was like, you know, get your education, get as high as you can go and be independent, build yourself so that if I'm not here one day, you're good. You'll be able to take care of yourself. So he really pushed and he he sacrificed a lot. He paid my education through, you know, the US because I got my master's and PhD here. So he put me through school, like we say. He was there obviously because, you know, he was already a faculty, so he knew how the world works in
Yes.
academia and helped me go through. Showed me the ropes and how do you write a paper and you know how do you get through all that. Mind you, I did this learning English,
I am
you know,
blown away. I am
master's
blown
degree and
away.
all that. That was rough. Shout out to all the international kids out there. Getting
Yes,
a
yes.
grad school in America is rough in itself, but doing it, learning the language, was crazy. So he carried me through that, and I don't think I would have done a PhD if I had not met him. You know,
He
I would.
sounds like a gift. I mean, I would love to meet him, and I know I will someday. Y'all should come to dinner at our house. But I'm going to tell you, I'm going through at 57 years old, I have a year left before I get my PhD, and I speak perfect English and I write extremely well, and it is a bitch. It is hard. Oh
It
my
is. It is.
God.
It was one of the hardest thing I've done
Totally.
besides trying to build a business on my own. That was tough. That was
Well,
tough.
as far as the business goes, I got you. I am totally like We are going to rise together, right? So I got you. I got you. I think you're fascinating. I want to speak a little bit about being biracial. You are what I think the country, if not the world, needs to see. And as we hopefully, and I work hard on this every day, hopefully become less fearful of whatever the other might be, we begin to see more biracial or multiracial children such that we acknowledge the fact, the scientific fact, that we are 99.76% exactly the same, all of us. Like, there is no such thing as race. Did you know? That is a social construct made up by white males of a certain age in order to oppress many particular populations. And now that we have the gift of science known as, genetic research, we can prove that this was all just made up
We
propaganda.
have done it already. It's already there, but it's
Yeah.
not being really, talked about or taught in school
Acknowledge.
like that. We have to do a lot of work on that end, but multiraciality allowed me to, for a long time, like I told you, I was always wondering what am I here for. I'm not, okay, I'm gonna be blunt. White people think I'm something exotic, right? They use that word. It's like
Yeah.
she's exotic. They don't know where I'm coming from. My people on the black side are like, who's this light-skinned girl? And
Yeah.
they do what I'm sure you've heard about it. They do what we call code switching with me.
Yes,
They're not too
absolutely.
sure. They're not too sure. They don't know that I'm them.
Right.
Well,
They don't
and
know how much.
I hate that so much.
Well, I'm gonna tell you,
But it's survival. It's survival.
they don't
So,
know to what degree you can relate to them in their journey.
Exactly. So I break the ice real quick. I'll code switch with you, but in the other way, so you can be like, oh, okay. She one of us. She
But
good.
that is what the beauty is of multiracial and biracial people is, because you are a living example of what humanity is, the human race, right? I bought a book today called Legacy, A Black Physician Reckons with Racism in Medicine.
Oh, beautiful.
So I do a lot of research around race, racial identity, racism, and gender equity. This new book is the most extensive, at least it seemed to be, and I'm going to read it and let you know for sure. But it's the most extensive and deep dive into racism in medicine. And in this country, we know there are huge disparities, right? It has to do with where you live. You live farther from the hospital, you don't get the care you need, or you're not listened to as well as others who are white-skinned, right? So yeah, total, that's just two of many, many factors on why Black people don't get the health care they deserve, right? Poor people don't get the health care they deserve. The other, women don't get the health care they deserve. It's those who look and act and sound like the people who created the operating system who get the health care they deserve.
Have you read Medical Apartheid?
Oh no, but that sounds like it's along the same lines.
It's a rough book, but
Yeah.
it's a really, really deep dive in the medical American system and being black in that system.
Wow.
You'll learn a lot. There's a lot of history. It's a deep, deep, deep book. Big research. But I'm a bridge. That's how I
Yes.
finally accepted myself as some kind
Totally.
of bridge. I do recognize myself as a black woman. That's what I take on the
That's
surveys.
your racial identity.
That's what I see myself as, that I was always around black women no matter where. And my mom is white, my dad is black, but I had a hard time figuring out where do I fit, because everybody thinks I'm so
Right.
strange in their midst, and I'm feeling comfortable with both cultures. Like I can really be comfortable with both
That's
cultures.
actually a blessing.
I understand both cultures. So I'll give you an example. I'm helping youth get into spaces they wouldn't get into. And that's because I don't look like what people feel is a problem. So, I'm playing off of that, of being very light skinned and white passing, like we say, to get into all of these spaces and make sure that I'm a bridge that allows all of these youth to come through and come forward, and I work as much as I can to allow these opportunities where I know they're not happening.
Let me ask you, let's unpack that a bit. I call it colorism. A lot of people call it colorism.
Yes.
If you read Ibram Kendi, he calls it colorism, or racial hierarchy, which is another way of terming it. You are someone who has been blessed with being able to identify and fit well in and feel like you belong to both groups, right? What about the sad existence of those who don't feel like they fit in either group, which I work to train to change that system, right? I work so that there don't have to be groups, right? But we can still appreciate differences. So I think that colorism is a thing, and I think that it was maybe going away, but it's certainly back now. Political landscape.
It's there amongst ourselves, it's there amongst our families,
Yeah.
and that's the deep work of people with an agenda to make sure that we get separated, right?
Absolutely.
If I was in slavery, I'd be one of those that is called like a house N, and that separation. So it still exists. And listen, I don't pretend having all the tools, right? But I always make sure that whoever I'm meeting, the darkest person, the lightest person, I'm always pulling them
Yeah.
in all of the directions that I can, so we come together. That's all I can do
You
because
are.
fit myself in all of these spaces. I make sure that my Black women, my sisters, know how beautiful they are. Their melanin makes their skin the most beautiful, powerful skin. They are creative, they are powerful. And I'm so glad for this movement that's pushing women to be proud of themselves, their natural hair, all of that stuff. I do everything I can to support that. There's a store called Beauty Master Supply in Chino. She run by one of my friend from Cameroon. I send as many people as I can over there. I support Black businesses in every way I can. I speak against colorism. I speak against racism in every way I can. And I do research on racial issues. I try the academic way, the art way, the social way, everywhere I can to use myself as the bridge between these cultures because I know what they are. I speak against, racist things that my white family says, not realizing how racist it is. I try to educate whichever way I can. I had to find my purpose because I was so lost in that biraciality for a long time. But you have to use yourself and your gift, whatever you're given, to heal the nations. Racism is nasty.
Thank you for your courage, because I will tell you, it could have gone the other way, right? Like the fear of both, or who am I, or this identity crisis, or having just to, fit in versus belong, right? It's exhausting and it's scary, but instead you've empowered yourself, which is the only kind of empowerment there is, really. And you've decided to take this on as a mission in your life, or a purpose or calling. I'm super grateful for that. I think that you are, you said it best when you said you're a bridge. I think that's beautiful. You definitely are a bridge, whereas some people are walls, right? Well, let me ask you, speaking of bridges, what's a distant place you might have visited and what did you learn there?
When I lived in Africa, coming from Europe, a wealthy place, I lived in wealthy African cities, but my parents were also working with different groups and villages and tribes. And so they used to take us, leave us in a village somewhere, and then go deep in the jungle, in the bush, like we call it. They didn't want to take us there because it was pretty tough places. So we've learned to live with nothing. And we've learned to, I've been homeless at some point, a couple of times in my life, for not a long time, but I have. So just living in spaces where we had nothing and realizing how beautiful life is,
Yes.
realizing that how authentic people are, how much they gave you having nothing, really taught us to live no matter what. And when we got back here, so in Africa we used to live pretty free. We did not put shoes on. When we came back, it took my mom 3 months to get us back into shoes because we have known that freedom and running with the kids and climbing trees and living with animals and getting bitten, getting sick and living off of the fruit of the land and all that. I'm so grateful for the natural experience that allows me to know that there's something out there beyond technology, beyond the riches and the opulence that we had in Europe or that we have in the US. I love that. I can live anywhere. I can live under a tree. I've been a Girl Scout for a long time, so I also know how to survive. That's that part. Living in
I
Africa is like that.
say, most people try to conquer nature, but you did the appropriate thing and lived among it with it in conjunction and harmony. Because we're just a part of nature. We're not the boss of nature. We're not, you're supposed to appreciate the animals and the land and the plants and the other living things. And live among them in harmony, not control them or kill them or and that's what we're doing, obviously. We're killing our planet. But I would say that this story of your being able to adapt is one that I don't think most people understand. That is the key to life and living and success, is the ability. It's not survival of the fittest. He didn't say that. He didn't. Darwin did not say that. He said the species that can adapt, those who can live in harmony among whatever, right? I personally was too sheltered and too protected. You had a taste of freedom at a young age and you loved it. And I think it's fascinating that you tell your story. I would love to put you on stage and have you tell your story.
Wow. Thank
We'll do
you.
that. I do that. We'll do that 1 year, for sure. We'll talk more about that offline. Well,
Of
what's the
course.
biggest risk you've ever taken? Clearly, you've lived a rich life and you're young, so you have a long time to go. God, ho we hope. What's the biggest risk you've taken and how did it work out for you?
I think, oh my God, so many, but the biggest risk. Okay, two. All right, I know we don't have a lot of time.
No, you can take all the time you want.
I met my husband in France, and we got married in less than a week. Right,
Oh
and
my gosh.
my
Wow.
parents were beside themselves.
Did you just know?
I just knew. It sounds cliche and all that stuff, but that was a huge risk because I really didn't know the man. But I don't know. I felt it. I had
Believe in intuition.
boyfriends before that, and I was like, okay, I'm done. I'm done playing around. I need to stabilize. My parents, by the way, separated very early when I was young. So I was not gonna be about that life. I wanted something
Yeah.
stable. It had been too crazy, all this move and going around. But you know, it is what it is. I told myself I'm gonna try to hold on and have something solid because I need this core that is not moving. We've been married 18 years, thank God. It's you know, it was, but it was a crazy gamble. So don't do that
Don't try
at
this at home, kids.
home. Don't
Now,
try this home.
I
The second
totally
biggest.
believe intuition.
Oh yeah, I was 25 and I was ready to do something about my life that was better than what I was into back then.
And I look forward to meeting him someday.
Yeah, okay, you'll be, ooh, he's gonna give you a run for your money.
I can handle it. I can handle
I
it. He's met his match.
hope so. Yes, no,
Well,
he's
this, look, you know, I love you. I respect you and your work, and you're an amazing storyteller, not just with words, but with your paintings and pictures and your way of teaching. Like it, a
Yes.
lot of people can't teach. You have a beautiful way of teaching, and in a way that's not judging, right? It's very inclusive. So, we will definitely work together again. And I hope that people who hear this podcast will reach out on the blog that I'm going to write. I'll have your name, your phone number, your email, and a little bit about your business, your biography, as well as your headshot, and a gallery of photos that sort of tell your story in pictures.
Beautiful. Thank you so
Yeah.
much.
And it'll be out in about 2 weeks, folks. You know, sometimes I'm late on that, sometimes I'm early on that, but I shoot for 2 weeks. And if you have any questions in the meantime and you want to meet, you know, or have a Zoom call, a Zoom meeting, or even in person, I don't know, whatever you're up for, Miriam, what
Yeah.
is your email address if they want to email you?
All right. Email MAY. CROW 7, maycrow7@gmail.com. That's my
Easy
email.
enough. Easy enough. All right, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. And oh my God, this was my pleasure. It was so great. I adore you.
Appreciate it. Thank you for this beautiful moment. Love it. Thank you so
Totally.
much.
We have many more to come.
Yes.
Have a good night, everybody.